Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
The summer of 2016 was harsh in Louisiana. Alton Sterling, a young unnamed black man, was gunned down by a police officer. Three innocent policemen were murdered and three others wounded. In retaliation, a biblical flood devastated the area. Baton Rouge Community College professor Clarence Nero joins us along with Delisa Brown. We're talking about voices from the bayou confronting racism, police brutality, and a historic flood. Louisiana, and welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. You know, we talk so often about where we are in 2017. A lot of people don't want to hear that we're still as racist as we were, say, in the 1960s. And but yet, everybody says there is still racism, so I think people wrestle between the two extremes. What is the gist of your message here from Voices from the Bayou?
Basically, our message is that, well, for one, we definitely want to spread equality and unity. We want to make that known that we're not targeting one race. The book is very diverse. We have so many different backgrounds of people who are talking about their own encounters when it comes to inequalities and racism. So it's definitely not one-sided. So the message that we definitely want to spread is that we just want to talk about the human race as a whole and not so much about targeting, you know, what one race has done towards the other.
Right. How does the flood play? Let's bring in Clarence Nero, professor. Hi. How does the flood play into this? Let's see. So Clarence Nero is, are you there, professor? Okay. Delisa, let's go back to you then.
Yeah, I'm not hearing him.
Oh, sorry. So the flood, I know about confronting racism, but how's the flood play into that?
Right. Okay, so basically what happened was we did have the Alton Sterling shooting, and then about, I'd say 3 days later, we had someone from the outside come in and kill just three random police officers, and 3 weeks later, we had the historic flood. So basically the way that everything ties in together is that we're thinking what happened with the flood was that everybody put their differences to the side. It didn't matter, you know, where you were from, what your race was, what your background was. And so basically the flood plays into that as far as we want to continue that same, basically the same thing that we did when we came together for the flood. We want to be able to do that outside of a historic setting.
Okay, so the flood was perhaps a healing vehicle where people put aside those differences during the flood?
Right. Yeah. It's more like a healing thing for the community. We just want to make sure we continue that, like I say, outside of a natural disaster. We want to be able to do that all the time.
You know, you're an Army veteran, correct?
I am.
How was the racial interaction because we always hear the military is one of the least racist places. Is that true?
I would definitely say you get signs of racism everywhere. I wouldn't say that it was just really, really blatant, but you definitely see spots of it even in the military as well.
Well, it used to be horrible, but, you know.
Right.
In the sense of people getting promoted and command decisions, I'm told it's better than it was and certainly better than other institutions. Is that fair enough?
Right. Yeah, I would say that. Yes, sir.
You know, I tell you what. When are we going to just get along, do you think, Delisa? I mean, are we going to – people – you know, somebody once said, I think it was – it might have been Bill Clinton, believe it or not, when he said, until we understand this, until we understand the roots of black pain and the roots of white fear, we're never gonna solve the problem.
Right.
That makes sense?
I think that's what it boils down to. I think that we just have such a fear when it comes to talking about racism, you know, just racism in general, because it's a very hard topic, especially when it comes to those two groups of people, when it comes to, you know, white against black. There's definitely a common ground and an understanding that needs to be had on both parts. And we need to be able to move forward in a positive way without outlashing, you know, angrily and without just lashing out in a way that is out of frustration.
Well, now, you say Alton Sterling, he was the one gentleman who was shot, what, right in the stomach, and they're on the ground. Is that the one? They were kind of wrestling on the ground. And
right, yes, sir.
Now, did he still have a weapon on him? I can't remember that part of it.
I think the case with that was they were saying that they didn't know if he was reaching for a weapon or not.
Oh, right.
Right, so it was just kind of one of those things where I guess, you know, heat of the moment.
Right.
And,
you know, I assume the worst. I always assume the worst when I'm dealing with police. I mean, I assume they want to. I mean, and I would be so afraid that they would get the wrong idea that I would. I don't know what you do. You put your hands on your head or you put your hands on the wheel. You know,
right.
I would do anything because I assume the worst.
Right, just to try to keep yourself safe, right.
And I think that's good advice. And I'm not saying that you're excusing the bad cop that does something totally horrible. That's not the point. I'm just saying, you know, shouldn't there be this desire to do what one has to do to survive?
Right, exactly.
Anyway, so that's just my thought on the deal. I know we have that horrible case in Minnesota where the guy had a permit. And he started to tell the guy, I have a permit. And he starts reaching for his wallet, and the cop sees the gun, heel of the gun, so he freaks out and shoots him and kills him.
Right.
If I'm that guy, I'm saying, you know what, I'm not taking my hand off the wheel because you're going to see this gun. I don't want to.
Right.
You know, whether the cop has to get it or the girlfriend or whatever, I mean, I just think it would behoove us all to assume the worst. I hate to, you know, people hear that.
It's kind of one of those tricky situations. just looking at different cases, things have played out a different way. Unfortunately, you know, from what we've seen, it's all been the same outcome of somebody getting killed.
Well, it's horrible, and I don't want to see it happen, but, you know, I'm trying to do what I can in the short run to reduce the risk is all I'm saying. Then you can always take it up afterwards in the police report, right? I mean, it's easier to fight it after the fact than when you're dead. It's hard to fight it, you know, is my point.
Right. But,
by the way, do you live in Louisiana?
I do. I live in Baton Rouge for now. I'll actually be moving to New Orleans at the end of next year. So right now I'm still in Baton Rouge.
Aren't things better there than, I mean, because I know you had David Duke running for governor like 25 years ago, if I recall, right? Lavelle Edwards, you probably weren't around at that time, but I mean, isn't it a little better now in Louisiana?
We're trying to get there. We're trying to get there. We definitely still working through some things. We definitely need to come together. You know, as far as it's just respecting the people who are in these positions. I would say it's gotten better just from my being here a little while. But I think just with any other city, we definitely have a long way to go. And that's kind of where this book plays in. Just in any situation, it's just showing us how we can come together in a positive way without outlashing, you know, negatively, being able to speak our voices and talk about, you know, the things that are going on, but just doing it in a positive way.
I would think respecting each other a little more and being polite might help a little bit.
Right.
What was the deal? Nelson Mandela, there was the all-white, except one guy, rugby team there in some big world final, and the crowd was all white, and Nelson Mandela went there and shook hands with all the players and was like, he's like, you could see like 70,000 people just breathing easier, you know, and he knew how to make them at ease. And so that was the white fear part of the equation. If the white fear goes away, that's huge, isn't it?
Right. I definitely think that's, you know, that's the one part of it. I definitely think that there's still a sense of fear, especially when it comes to our black men. So that's definitely something that we can, you know, try to work on moving forward.
Well, Yeah, it's hard to have everybody wear a three-piece suit with a tie. We're all messed up. I mean, people race to their stereotypical conclusions.
And right.
It's sad.
And we were just talking about that earlier, how, you know, you really can't judge a book by its cover. You never know, just what's on the inside of a person. So you really have to be compassionate, no matter how someone looks on the outside. We actually mentioned that earlier. We have a guy in the book. His name is Ahmad, and he's just your general type of guy that I would just word it as a police officer would kind of, in a way, maybe afraid of him because of how he appears. However, he talks about how he had an encounter with police officers where he was wrongfully treated. And at the end, all he talks about is forgiveness and how even though that happened with him with police officers, he didn't have any hard feelings towards them. He just wanted to move forward, not target every police officer because of what had happened to him, and just basically still have compassion in his heart to create change. So you would definitely get an eye-opener by reading stories like that when it comes to stereotyping and not really knowing what's on the inside of a person.
Well, that's very true. But Philando Castile, the poor guy that got shot in St. Paul, had dreadlocks, and he was being stopped because they thought he was a robbery suspect. And he'd been stopped something like 52 times since 2002. And, I'm sure if he was wearing a three-piece suit, he wouldn't have been stopped 52 times. That's the sad part of it.
I mean, that's the unfortunate part of it. The appearance definitely does play, a part in some of these things, which it shouldn't. But unfortunately, it does.
Well, that's true. There's an element of street smarts that goes along with it. Until we can have everybody just be wonderful people, there's going to be a long wait for that, Lisa.
Right. But
I don't know what happened to Clarence Nero. I thought he was going to be on the show with us, but
he actually texted me. He said I gave him this number, and he tried to call in instead of going to voicemail.
Oh, really? Okay. Well,
yeah.
Not sure what happened there. We can actually get it from you during the break. You want to take a break? No,
let's take a little break so we can try to.
Oh, he's on the phone. No, he's not. Okay, we'll see what we can do. Just for
okay. He can call us.
He can call us. I'll give the number.
Okay, 608-210-1667.
As we talk about it, because it sounds like if people could just talk, we could just sit down and talk to each other.
Right.
Doesn't that just calm the tensions quite a bit?
Right. And that's what he talked about as well. He talked about how he introduced it to his classroom. Of course there was so much diversity. And although there was tension in the room, everybody was able to come together and talk about the situation without really lashing out and just having those open conversations.
Yeah.
So I think about moving forward, that's definitely what we need to happen more.
All right. Well, I don't know if Clarence called us or if he's trying to listen online, but, you can try to call him. But anyway, or talk to him in the future. But I think it's a great message. How do you get the voices from the bayou?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And what's the best? Go ahead.
Get the book on Amazon.com. We also have a website, www.voicesfromthebayou.com. Those are the main two places that you can get it, but you definitely could get it directly from Amazon.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I love Louisiana food. I love New Orleans and the whole thing. I think the professor might actually be calling right now. I don't know if he's been listening online or not.
Okay, they might be
because
I just gave him another number, so they may be him.
Oh, okay. Very good. Is that the professor? Hey, Clarence Nero, the professor. Hello, professor.
How you doing?
Well, we're doing fine with Delisa.
There he is.
There you are. We're just talking, trying to talk things out and just realizing if people would just take the time to talk, we'd be better off. Don't you think so?
Right. Exactly.
But we were talking go ahead. Sorry.
Thank you for talking with us tonight.
Oh, no problem. We were talking about the roots of white fear and the roots of black pain. Until we understand both, we're in big trouble. And so you just, if you calm the tensions, if you disarm the tension, we were talking about Philando Castile, the man in Minnesota that got killed short point-blank range. He had a permit to carry, and the guy said, I want your wallet. He reached down, and the guy saw the gun, freaked out, and killed him.
Right.
But I'm thinking, boy, you know, and you talk to people, I would assume the worst. You know, I would assume the worst, so I would keep my hands on the wheel because I assume the worst. Maybe it's my Mediterranean background. But we're not to the point where we trust each other, are we?
Right.
No, we're not. I mean, there's a lot of stereotypes and things that we think we know about each other. But if we begin conversations like we did in the classroom at my college that sparked this book, Voices from the Bayou, we began, you know, in that classroom I had white students, Muslim, black students, and they began to share their stories with each other. And it was very hard. And through these stories, we realized there was a lot of deep-rooted pain and racism and discrimination that all races had experienced. Not just the black race, white race, Muslim.
Right.
Everybody had experienced some form of racism or discrimination or had heard or in their families been told that they were supposed to think or believe a certain thing. And as a result, people grew up with these things in their mind and feel like they can't trust the woman they learn.
Yeah.
You know, that we're more alike than unlike.
So true. And they don't take the time like we're doing now to talk and just speak to each other. It's human being. And I think something only has to happen one time, and that just will cloud your emotions and your feelings for a lifetime. Isn't that the case?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you have a bad experience racially once, that's going to cloud your perspective. Right?
Right.
So, you know, it's hard to heal those wounds. It's hard to disarm those stereotypes and those fears and of course, the pain of being the victim. It's going to be a tough time to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
It is very tough. I mean, we know that it's not, I mean, a magic wand is not going to solve and fix everything immediately and at once. Like I said, this goes back a long ways, and it's a lot of history. You know, this is our Achilles heel. This is the thing in America that we've had to reconcile with, racism and discrimination and our differences. And we've made a lot of progress, obviously, and come a long way. But we find in these incidents where police officers and the incidents that have happened has sparked a lot of debate and controversy. And what we need to do is, like I said, not only continue to have conversations about it, but speak up and speak out about what we really want and what our intentions really are. And that's what the students are doing with this project. Young people, the millennials, you know, are the driving force, and they're the ones who we need to rely upon because they're the future of the country, and they have something to say. They have to use their voice and get involved in the discussion in these topics because this is something that's impacting all of us and all of our communities. It could happen. If it could happen in Baton Rouge, it could happen anywhere because that's
right.
We're a small town. Football, college town, LSU, football.
I think of basketball. Like, see, I'm old enough to remember Shaquille O'Neal and even when I was a little kid, Pete Maravich was playing.
Right.
You know, I know he wasn't. He was a white guy, but he was damn good. I'll tell you that right now.
Right.
Yeah, but actually, it's kind of sad because sports would kind of heal a lot of wounds. Sports and music and those kinds of things and. But if people would just take the time to talk and, you know, reach out to each other. But I think when you're afraid or you're, you know, things can't happen. I mean, just, you know, that how do you solve that problem? You know, when you just, you know, you don't be stupid, right? You're nice to people and things will eventually get better. Is that the way to go?
I definitely think that by not addressing the issue, you know, you're not really helping it. It's okay to be cordial and be polite. We're supposed to do that, you know, anyways. But not addressing the hard issues, you know, to me, it doesn't make it go away. So that's why, starting everything with this book to hopefully get more people, you know, more students, more young adults to talk about this so that we can branch over, you know, more generations so it can be talked about more. Because we definitely can't fix anything by ignoring it and by, you know, staying silent.
Yeah, that's true. But in the meantime, just stay alive. I wouldn't.
Right.
It's okay to be smart in the short run. Is that fair enough?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I'm that way. If I see a cop, I assume the worst. I think they're going to come and get me. I mean, here I am, this middle-aged white guy, but I don't, you know, I don't assume that everything's going to be great. There's always that element of survival that comes over you. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, if something happens that's bad, you can litigate it after the fact, but you can't litigate it if you're dead.
Right.
There's a lot of like I say, profiling and stereotyping. We, you know, our students talk about that in the book, and, you know, some of them have been discriminated against because of how they may dress or care themselves.
Oh, sure.
You know, the police may assume certain things. The one thing that they all have indicated that they have a lot of compassion and understanding for the police and what they're there for.
Mm-hmm.
So this book is definitely not against the police in any way. Matter of fact, we dedicate the book to 3 officers who were slain in Baton Rouge as well. And as well as Alton Sterling, because we wanted to heal the community and understand that these, you know, we're not, like, once again, trying to water down what has happened. We know what has been happening. We're not just trying to resurrect the situations to create disunity. We want to bring people together and to talk about the issues in a healthy and constructive way, the way we're doing now, trying to bring light to what happened in our community. You know, at the end of all of that, we had a natural disaster that left a lot of people without homes. And we saw black and white working together in that community. It should take a natural disaster for us to realize that we rely upon each other.
Hey, we're all humans, right?
Community. We're all humans at the end of the day. You know, we bleed the same. That's what the student's writing about in the book. You know, at the end of the day, we're all humans. And that we all want the same thing in life, to be happy, to live in peace, for our children to raise up and go to good schools and have all their basic needs and necessities. You know, we all really at the heart want the same things. And I think that, you know, but like Delisa said, by not saying anything, though, it's pretending like it's not happening. We have to stop pretending that these things are not happening and be so shocked when they do. We know that in our homes and our communities where we live, and sometimes in our places, there are people in those spaces who are very negative and who do say hateful, discriminatory things. It's up to us to correct that when we hear it, when we see it, and to deal with it and to talk about it and to ask somebody, why do you feel that way? Why do you think that way? Everybody is not the same. You know, we learned that in this book with Voices from the Bayou, the students, they all had different opinions, and they all come from different communities.
Right.
But we're not all the same. We don't all think the same. We don't all feel the same.
That's correct. But you can be decent to each other. I mean, you can be kind to each other, I guess, no matter what your philosophy is or background, right? I mean, if you're on edge, if you got the attitude either way, people get their fists up in the air, and, you know, bad things happen.
Right.
You know, it's just...
You can't... Yeah, the bad things happen. You know, Dr. Martin Luther King, in the nonviolent movement, why it was so profound, he said that darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can. Hate cannot drive out hate, only love can.
Right.
If you have your... If you shooting and we both are... You know, if I'm trying to talk and you... And if somebody's beating me and then I start fighting back, at the end of the day, we just had a fight, but nothing was resolved.
You're exactly right.
Nothing's solved. You know what I mean? We're just... in a fight, and we keep attacking each other, but we're not getting to the heart of the problem and trying to come to resolutions and solutions. And that's what, like I said, in the classroom, all those tense moments when you have a group of diverse group in a classroom talking about very sensitive issues after summer that we had in Baton Rouge, it was very tense in the classroom.
Yeah.
But like I say, the Voices from the Bayou is a project that allowed people to see. To experience what the students were experiencing in that classroom by telling their stories. And all these students outright crying in the classroom, white students, black students. They're outright crying and feeling the weight of, you know, our young people feeling the weight of it. I had a white girl in my class whose grandfather, her grandfather disowned her because she refused to adopt to racial ideologies that had been passed down to her mother. And she, you know, she felt the weight of that on her shoulders, and that's the kind of things that a lot of young people are dealing with and growing up under these extreme circumstances, black, white, Muslim, like I say, where they're hearing all these things. And, you know, you're not born to hate. You know, you're not. This is something that you're not born to do. You grow into what you hear, what you see, and what people tell you.
You know, there was a scene from To Kill a Mockingbird where, you know, Gregory Peck plays the white lawyer who's defending the black man who's wrongly accused of looking at a white woman the wrong way or whatever. And he's confronted in his driveway by this racist guy who's just filled with hate. And then Peck wouldn't give him what he wanted. He was just kind. And you know, you could see the guy melting down. You could see him realizing what an idiot he was. It was just it was a powerful scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people can be shown how stupid they are, how, you know, idiotic. But I guess you can do that by not giving them what they want, right?
Right.
Anyway, I love the conversation. Voices from the Bayou. Baton Rouge students confront racism, police brutality, and the historic flood. Actually, the flood was the healing vehicle, it sounds like, which is good to hear.
Right.
And, you know, being an Indiana kid, I kind of miss LSU being better at basketball. Of course, football, they're always pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
Remember that 80s? Yeah. Almost beat us in 87 with Dale Brown and the gang, but hey, not quite. Anyway, thank you so much, Professor Clarence Nero and Delisa Brown. It has been a lot of fun. We appreciate
you.
Thank you so much. Thank you a lot. And hey, let's keep trying to save the world one day at a time, huh?
Right.
Exactly. We're
Amazon.
Doing our little part.
Hey, a little gumbo wouldn't hurt. Hey, voices from the Bayou. Either that or some black and red fish and some au gratin potatoes. I'm getting hungry, so.
There you go.
We could talk about that all night. A cup runneth over.
Right.
All right. Hey, go Tigers, huh? Tiger bait. We'll see you. All right, take care.
Thank you.
Phil Dawson coming up. Mitch Hanks Show, MadisonTalks.com, and Facebook Live.
Is the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
Need a comedian or MC for your private party or corporate event? Don't be shy. I can do it without telling any dirty jokes. In fact, when I'm not doing my Frank Sinatra tribute show, I've done stand-up at the comedy club and at private events for years. Whether it's a large convention or private gathering in your living room, I've done it. We all need to laugh more. The world can be even more stressful than it is. There's no business like show business, and I usually find those of you who have the best jokes about your coworkers at the company dinner. So feel free to contact me at 347-0374. That's 347-0374. Or email at info@madisontalks.com. That's info@madisontalks.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to The Mitch Hanks Show.
Remember? All right, we are going to talk to Phil Dawson, formerly of WIBA Sports. Phil is quite the personality. Very funny, very talented. He had a bit of a falling out with Clear Channel, or iHeart, I guess, at the end. But Phil is still, he's got all kinds of things going on in his future and fun to talk to. He's kind of an old soul in some ways. I went to a Waukesha bar. It was promoted on radio. He was going to do a Frank Sinatra sing-off with another guy from Milwaukee. And they're both in their 20s or, you know, early 30s, and Phil singing Sinatra, and the other guy was, and so the judges were there. It was amazing. And Phil's younger than I am, and I was always chastised for being a Sinatra fan at 56. Hello, Mr. Dawson.
Hey, how's it going, Mitch?
Long time no talk. And
how you been?
I've been okay. I know you've been back and forth around the world. I mean, you've been to Japan. You have a beautiful Japanese wife, and you've been visiting there, right? A couple of trips?
Yeah, a couple of trips. I spent about 2 months there. It was October and November. there, and, you know, kind of transitioning into chapter two of my life, and that had a real good, we had a real, you know, good moving forward process of, you know, I'm trying to start a craft brewery over there, and we're like established, established as a company on paper, and, you know, so now we're moving into like the next phases about, you know, where are we getting equipment, and, you know, all about the location, and, you know, how big of a plan are we going to do? So it's been pretty intense. It's
It's
pretty cool.
That's wonderful. You've been working on this for a long time. I know people heard you in the morning and so forth. I think it was on WIBA radio, and you were in sports and all this. But you were, even during that time, you were thinking about this brewery plan, this dream, right?
Because it all goes back to... you know, my brother lived over in Japan for a little bit. His wife is half Japanese, as it turns out. And so I went over there and visited him. And then, you know, I met my wife. And
But you met her in Madison, right? Your wife?
Met her in Madison, yeah. She was an au pair here in town.
Wow.
And so, and my buddy was dating a friend of hers. And so you just kind of... You know, we met through mutual friends, and our schedules worked out that we could all hang out at the same time and everything. So, you know, we made a couple of trips, like to visit her family, and had been there multiple times throughout the years. And then it kind of dawned on me, like, where's like the good beer? Because you
in
know,
Japan.
Here in Madison, it's like any Japan. Like, okay, after you get, you know, you get over the initial. Like novelty of like, hey, I'm in a new country. This is so much fun.
Right,
I'm drinking with different people, and it's just a a culture shock. And then it turns out, and you go like, okay, well, like, where's the beer?
I want a cold
here
one.
We got,
yeah,
I want to, and not just like the Miller Lite or Bud Light, but like, where's an IPA? And then I've been doing research on just the history of beer in Japan, and talking with people and. Who've been involved in that industry for a long time over there, and things just started kind of moving in that direction of like finding out more and more, and because I've been talking about it and telling everybody about what I want to do, things just kind of moved in the right direction. And so we took a huge step this past summer, and we're going to try to do it. And so we're moving that direction. It's pretty cool.
That is awesome. So when will the dream possibly become a reality?
We're hoping to go back. So my next trip over there is planned in March. And if everything, and it won't go perfectly, it won't go as perfect as planned. It hasn't. But, next year, fall, we'd like to start. In the summer, I'd like to start building. In the fall, we'd like to start, have like a grand opening. But all of that is, TBA, because there's so many little details that have to get worked out.
Now, I don't know, but you want to talk about you were at WIBA and you had a little bit of a parting of the ways there, but I don't want to go into, stuff out of school, but, a little difference of opinion toward the end of your reign there.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to talk about any of that, but I guess.
The thing that stinks about it is that there's an audience that I think is missing me.
you were fun to listen to.
Yeah, and so that kind of stinks.
That's right, Jeff.
And the people there, I love the people there too. So,
There's some good people there. These things happen. I mean, what happens is, we live in a world that's kind of confining in terms of certain utterances that may be innocent, but somebody else takes it the wrong way, and that's the
I don't know how many people know the background on it, because I had some tweets questioning, about, because today's society, and we're seeing it all unfold even further now, when we look at, all these celebrities, right? Whether it's directors, actors, everybody's getting in in trouble for something of what they said or what they, you know.
Well, they might have grabbed somebody too, which is never good. I mean, you know.
Right. That's a little over the line. But, you know, my whole thing on this is, like, these are discussions that have to happen. And who can have those discussions? People that are afraid to have them cannot have those discussions. You know what I mean?
Right. And I think, well, people don't know what they're talking about. Go ahead.
I think in the media right now, it's almost impossible to have discussions on race relations without people being offended by something.
Well, go ahead.
In most cases, it's not even the actual, like, person being offended. It's someone who is, like, on the internet, they call it white knighting. You know what that is? Like, everyone's coming to the defense of someone, even though that person, like, isn't offended. They're like,
right,
okay.
Right. Well, yeah. I don't know what we can say. We should make it clear that you said nothing racist at all in a tweet where you were glorifying a cultural tradition of a certain ethnicity, and it was a very innocent thing. And the person involved was a player. I don't know what you're going to say about this, but he was not offended.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. I mean, we were talking about Bronson Koenig, and if you remember in the what game was it? He hit.
I think it was Virginia. You know, Virginia Tech. He had 8 threes.
Yeah, he set the record for threes in a game.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I question whether or not, you know, is it appropriate? Is it insensitive to bring up cultural heritage when talking about this stuff?
Yeah, you were saying there should be a celebratory dance that you felt like doing, and it was kind of tied to Native American tradition.
Basketball terms, and you're making it rain. Well, can you tie it into someone's ethnicity? And again, at a corporate level, no, you can't. But you can in other cases.
Well,
you know, it's just it's all convoluted. It's all crap. It's all.
Well, that's right, and you have colleagues
trying to protect. I don't know what people are trying to protect or are afraid of.
Right, and there were colleagues at the station that said worse things in the past and have somehow survived. So, you know, you get the wrong letter from the wrong administrator or the wrong whatever the case, and now you're in defensive mode. We should say for the record, though, that Bronson Koenig was in no way offended. In fact, my son knew his roommate, and they had a conversation, and there was never a problem. But
and what I wanted to do is have a deeper discussion about it, and no one wanted to have that discussion.
No, the conversation ends is what happens, and I mean, there's a clear line.
That's too bad.
But it is, but, and of course, I think wasn't it fair to say that you were even before that kind of leaning toward the career in Japan with the brewery business? Right?
Yeah, that's why there was no fear on my part about departing.
Right.
Because the plan was already in motion.
And that's outstanding. And number to call 210-1667, 210-1667, or on Facebook Live, as well as MadisonTalks.com. Phil Dawson, who's one of the most talented young sportscasters for a long time, now an entrepreneur heading into the brewery business in Japan, which I think is so cool. Now,
it's challenging.
And there's also this sort of business cultural element in Japan, as in over the years, where they try and they look to America for certain guidance in areas of business. Isn't that fair to say? And so,
trends, you know, in trends and cultural trends, and craft beer is something that that's starting to trend. I would say it would put it about like 15 to 20 years behind where we are in terms of, you know, just like flavor profiles of people, right? So when you walk into a bar here and they have 30 different, you know, styles and flavors of beer, it's not like that over there. You walk into a restaurant and there's one choice.
What? Sake? Is that what it is? Sake?
You know, like you get, they got Asahi, Kirin, Sapporo, and it's very similar to what, you know, bars were like back here when it was just you had Budweiser, Bud Light,
right.
And those were the only options. And then there was this groundswell of people making their own, this groundswell of people, you know, and the other cultural difference here is that people, you know, 25, 30 years ago were cashing in their 401ks and saying, I'm going to go do this because this is what I want to do. In Japan, it's much different. You know, it's a risk-averse society.
Right.
They don't have people that are jumping into something that doesn't have,
tradition.
A clear finish line of what it's going to be. So I think that's what I can be. And they're already good brewers over there doing this, you know.
Yeah, but you've got the personality.
The numbers tell us, and the numbers tell us that, so here of total beer sales, right, of all the beer that's sold, you know, up to 20% of that is craft beer. And that includes Sam Adams, and that includes all the big, quote-unquote, craft brewers. Yeah. And over there, it's still less than 1%.
Wow, okay.
And so there's a huge market available, and most of all, they need education on, you know, styles and education on flavor profiles, and that's something that I want to be able to teach.
You're the man who can show them how to drink beer the right way. So
the right way is drink it.
Yes. Hey, can we, or as Sinatra would say, you know, you pour the drink out of the bottle and I'll drink it. You know, I was at the Vegas show in 78 where he was talking about the convention of people that were there. Now, you were a guy that, I hope there's some Sinatra music at your brewery. Is that fair to say? Because he's huge in Japan, isn't he? I mean, Frank and whole karaoke.
I got a whole side gig planned that I'm going to be traveling around doing Sinatra shows in
Japan.
That's
fantastic. Just be careful with My Way, though. There's a suicide. There's Philippines. They had like six My Way killings. Right.
Yeah.
So you're safe to sing My Way in Japan. I have the concert in 85 in Tokyo. You know, he's still sounding pretty good. He was, you know, he's getting up there, but he still was okay in 85. It was a longer show.
Yeah.
He's there in 74 as well, which you can YouTube. But we're talking Phil Dawson. Former
My dog's acting.
Dog is acting up. Now, in sports for a long time, though, you still have to be following what's going on in the sports world. I mean, it's a tough year.
What's been different is that I haven't been following as, you know, closely, because it's not like I...
Not your job,
to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's been kind of nice. And then with, like, the Packers losing Aaron Rodgers, I have, like, zero interest. But who cares? Why should I even care?
So you're really
what
not...
What do I want to want?
You're not really a baked-in, you know, Packer soldier from the beginning.
Not when Aaron Rodgers goes down.
Aaron goes down, yeah. So that's
This is the Green Bay Packers we're talking about, Mitch. They talk Super Bowls, their championships. Not this not making the playoffs bowl.
Well, yeah, see, you're too young to remember when they didn't make the playoffs, probably, huh?
I guess I remember Makowski. Makowski was the hero.
Don Makowski. Yeah.
Like, they won 8 games. Holy cow.
Well,
magic.
The 89 year, I was a reporter in Green Bay and News, and they hadn't been in a while, and it got to the point where the fans were going to the airport after they'd come home from a road game. It could be zero on a Sunday night, and they just beat Tampa Bay, and there'd be 2,000 Packer fans at the airport. I mean, honest to God, they'd be that way. We'd go out there and... One time, my lovely wife went to a Makowski party. She had a few drinks, and anyway, we'll talk.
Toss the football around a little bit.
We'll tell that story off the show, but still,
sure.
I mean, there are all kinds of things that would go on. It was just wild, you know. But the Packers are a cultural icon, it's similar to Indiana basketball. I have to tell you, where they have sold out crowds for Midnight Madness, which, you know. I kind of chuckle. Wisconsin has their little scrimmage in October, and they have like 5,000. We had a big crowd.
Yeah.
Big crowd.
I'm much more heartbroken for Greg Gard over, you know, losing guys to injury.
He's about as nice a guy. Yeah.
We know that they're young, and we know that they're going to develop. And I think those are those are fun teams to cover, even when they're like losing, because you get to see how. Like these 18 and 19 year old kids react to things that in their lives are so big, right?
Right, right.
Like, this is what their livelihood is. This is what they've been, you know, everything is about that.
Oh, sure.
And even worse so is like with Kobe King, like you get injured and he's just like, no.
You know, they just say knee. I don't remember if I've read if he had his ACL. You hear is knee injury. I didn't hear anything else.
Yeah.
So
I don't have my ear to the ground anymore.
But there's that sort of that way in sports now where they don't give you very much information, you know, and if you're they don't want to give it away. I don't know why. It's just so weird. Or I've heard them say.
I think it has to do with like health laws, doesn't it? Like HIPAA laws. Like you're not.
Oh, maybe that's true. Yeah, but usually in sports.
I mean,
Gordon Hayward broke his foot in that first game for Boston, and nobody said, "Oh, we can't tell you what it is." I mean, of course you could see it. It was grotesque, but you know. Now we see his daughter's
foot dangling there.
Well, he's out of the boot. I'll have to say, as I follow the Celtics religiously, and Gordon is out of the boot, so I'm thinking he'll be back by maybe April 20th. You know, that's my plan. But no,
20, good day.
That's right, marijuana day, right? No, but see, the people are going to think you're stoner. No, you like beer. We're going to promote that.
Well, yeah, I do.
By the way, the Badgers football team, they really had a chance to beat Ohio State. It was kind of exciting. They were on that last drive, and there was a penalty, and these things happen.
Yeah, what an awesome season, though. I don't know. I feel a little bit different, too, being out of covering sports. I'm not as disappointed that they lost. You know, if I'm in it,
because you're not working,
that's the whole goal. That's the whole dream, to see that happen. Because because everyone gets to celebrate with that, and there's still fans out there who are like, oh well, what a waste, you know, going the entire regular season unbeaten is if you lose that game, right?
Well, some
what a
people,
waste.
Yeah, well.
I mean, it's a waste because you don't. What are you doing with it? Oh, you get to go to the Orange Bowl. Well, that's not the final. That's not in the Final Four. That's not what we want to be. But now I'm like, that's still pretty cool.
But our Badger
Maybe I'm
fans
getting older, Mitch.
Our Badger fans like that, though. I mean, you know. Cause...
Yes, there's a. Well, Mitch, you got to okay. Remember, you just brought up the '80s Packers, right?
Right.
There's a whole generation of Badger fans that have no idea what losing is.
Well, that's true.
They don't even know what it is.
And by the way, Paul Chris, is he the coolest? I mean, he's so laid back. He's like, he has no ego at all, which is so refreshing. And
yeah,
he's the perfect fit because he's got Barry Alvarez there, bless his heart, as the sort of the big shot boss. And let's face it, if you have an equal ego, it's not going to work, right? I mean, Dean Martin knew that he couldn't, you know, like mess with Frank. I mean, he was the funny guy. But, you know, if you get clashing egos, it doesn't work. And here's Chris.
Right.
Chris is like a guy that... I'm sure you could let Barry Alvarez go off for 20 minutes and say, "Okay, Coach, good point."
Thanks, Coach.
I mean, he's not going to be a problem.
And he's super sharp and witty and so fun to listen to, you know, off the air too. You know, even more so because he has, you know, he's a true sports nut too. I remember talking to him last year about where was he? Or maybe 2 years ago. And Tony Granato, I think he was coaching with Detroit, and they were in Pittsburgh, and he was coaching at Pitt. And they went to the game, and he brought his son, and, you know, he kept his son out all late because they went to the hockey game and hung out with Granato and stuff after the game.
Yeah.
And his son had to go to class, and he's like, no, this is more important. You got to meet these guys.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, you said beers. You can't do shots of beers, do you? So, yeah, I've got a friend of mine who's doing a new product where you'd, like, reach across the bar with a giant pole and serve shots. It's kind of exciting, but I guess you wouldn't do that with
kind
beer.
Of a what is this?
Well, we'll talk about
what
it off the air.
Technology?
I don't want to give it away and have somebody try to copy his idea. So.
Oh, sure, good idea.
But we'll talk about that off the air. Yeah, I hope they missed that part. But anyway, I haven't talked to Phil Dawson in so long. It's good of you to talk to us on the air. I appreciate that. I'm getting a lot of Facebook feedback here. But
good.
No, you're right.
People,
you know, one day you were gone, and you know, people missed you. And
you know, just through contractual stuff too, like the company is not allowed to talk about it either.
Legally, you can't really. You know.
Yeah, like they can't say anything that happened or anything. So.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'll do a podcast about it because I think, you know. Honestly,
well, you're allowed. Are you? You're allowed to talk about it then. Is that the deal?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then you're fine.
Yeah, and like honestly, I think it's stuff that I think a lot of people are dealing with and don't know how to deal with. In conversations, because there's too much because of what happens, you know, with media and the coverage of it. You know, I look at the media now so differently well, and how they cover things.
I don't like the way people couch themselves, too. I mean, there's really no humor in the sense of the old days where you're just doing a joke versus something very mean and, you know, mean-spirited. It was just a different thing. You know, so we've come a long way, but yet maybe we haven't come that far. You know, another problem is high school.
I think people are lost in what they can do or say.
Yeah, right.
And who are you supposed to talk to about that? And the people you're talking to, when I grew up surrounded by every race, culture, creed, and everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are people in positions positions of power that didn't grow up around different cultures, races, and creeds. And so they only have conceptions that are then formed through what they see on TV or what they read on Twitter. And what we know now is that all of that can just be manufactured. It can all be, just to twist people's minds, and it happens.
Well, I've done stand-up where I do stand-up, and I would do some jokes about various political or cultural groups, and it was a joke, and people were uptight. I could feel the stress in the room, and the people in the group itself would be laughing hysterically, but in the case of one couple at the back of the room just laughing, but everybody else is uncomfortable because they don't feel comfort. God, that's awkward.
Right.
So people feel awkward.
It's off limits.
Lighten up for, I mean, good Lord. Now, actually, I saw Rickles live. He was grandfathered in, but people laughed at him, and he was like 76, and every group he hit, and it was hilarious, but, these things happen. He tells the man in the front, "Are you Japanese?" He says, "No, I'm Filipino." He says, "That better? Is that better?" And then he says, "I was there during the war. Your family was in the weeds going, are they gone yet?" You know. But he went from one joke to the other, you know, and people are just laughing. And, but I guess you can't do anything. You can't make fun. Except I guess he sees the guy in the front row with an obvious toupee. He says, "Nobody would notice, sir."
Well, even harder, Mitch, is that, okay, if you can't even make let's say we cut the jokes, all right? We cut the jokes.
Yeah.
You can't even broach those conversations publicly. You know, you can't even have conversations. What are the lines? Where are the lines? You know, who's determining the lines that are being crossed? And, you know, in my case, it was, corporate lines. And who is corporate? I can't even talk to corporate. There's no face. There's nobody with it. There's no... This is the policy. These are policies.
The policies, right. I mean, it doesn't have,
whatever.
Faceless.
And then you challenge the policies, and sure enough, they don't know what to do.
Now, you could always do stand-up and say whatever you want, I guess. You know, there's a little more latitude to the club, But parties are a problem. Private parties, man, that was what gets you in trouble, because you're going to their house. So I've learned I have to be really, really tame on that stuff. But you learn these things in life, where you're working, and you see the people who survive by being so vanilla, being so safe. You don't want to listen to them. They're just not funny.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I can't listen to that. I don't approve of it. I can't. It's fabricated. It's false.
Exactly.
Like what are we getting here? Like, I'm okay with flawed people. Because most people are flawed.
Exactly.
I actually prefer it because that's what I can connect to. I am flawed, so that's why I like flawed people. I don't know. Maybe that's
I haven't met too many saints, I'll tell you. Some people think they are, I guess, but No, as long as you're not mean to people, I mean, you can work on your flaws, but to me, there ought to be just sort of a baseline, I mean, the one thing about my own kids, and they had issues growing up and drove me nuts. Now they're doing really well, but I would never, ever want them to be mean to somebody. That was where I would really, lower the boom. That was the biggest thing I cared about. And they're nice kids. Once you do that, you're just kind of, okay, well, I guess that's all right. They can have a bad night or a bad this, but I don't care because they're not mean people.
I agree. This is why we get along, Mitch.
As opposed to their manic depressive father who would stew over a bad round of golf in the corner for like an hour and a half. But my son
grab
would
grab a whiskey and
I'd go do a scotch and listen to in the wee small hours of the morning, where my son would shoot 94 and he's still doing jokes, laughing. You know, that was the most impressive thing that I was most proud of, because I was more the traditional Al Pacino type when things would be, you know, bad. The manic thing. And that manic thing gets you in trouble in life, by the way. Got to keep a sense of humor.
You know, we should, I'm in town for a while. We should do a duet or something on your on the big show.
Where can we do?
Show?
Well, I got to trim little LBs, because the last time I did one, somebody on Facebook Live, and I looked at Orson Welles at the end. I said, no, I'm not going to do this. Until we could do, though, is the karaoke bar still downtown, University Avenue?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Let's
do some karaoke.
We can always meet there for a drink and do a song, you know.
I say we host an event down there.
Well,
to
get
the people in.
Oh,
karaoke sing-off. You know, I'm a champion karaoke singer.
Hey, before you were even born, I was winning cash on Sunday night, and Joe Scalise was a judge.
about head-to-head.
Now he's sitting there doing shows all over the country as Dean Martin, you know. He's the old judge of the Sunday night karaoke contests. It was a big deal, because you win $30 if you won. It was exciting. No, we'll figure something out. We'll figure something out. The money's gone off the table. Things are too tight. But Phil Dawson.
I also want to point out too. I do streaming too, Mitch. I know you're on Facebook Live right now too, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what Twitch is? Have you heard of Twitch? Have your kids told you?
That? I've got a Twitch in the back of my neck right now, but that's about it. No. What is Twitch?
The video game streaming.
Oh, the video game streaming. Like
So it's like I get to play the game, do the commentary, have an audience.
Well, tell me, give us the command points.
Hold on. Are you on Facebook Live right now?
I'll pull it up.
I'll post it in there.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Excellent.
Hold on here.
We're on for one more minute, so.
Oh.
We had some issues with Facebook earlier, but we're fine. I'm doing podcasts now. That's what I do. And we had the one with the Holocaust survivor, Eva Kaur, is running right now around the country on her Power of Forgiveness. But, yeah, we do the live show to keep our feet in the water, like, right now once a week. So, but you...
There we go. I posted it.
Oh, good. Give me the link, though. I mean, what do you give Audible?
Yeah, twitch.com/BrickBravo. You know, you got... When you're on the internet, you got aliases. And Brick Bravo is an alias.
twitch.com/Brit Brit Bravo.
Give it a listen, give it a look. We can hang out. You guys can talk to me there too.
Oh, good. Well, Phil Dawson, always enjoyable. It's good to talk to you, my friend. Rolling down memory lane, looking ahead to the future. Good luck with your great career as owner of a microbrewery in Japan.
And sounds good to me.
Of course, you're going in March. Do they watch the tournament in Japan? Do they care about it? Probably not much. But that's all right.
No, they don't.
All right, well, you take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Phil
Dawson, same to you, buddy. Well, I want to thank Bob Keller for the space here on West Washington Avenue, Washington Court, Tuscan Place, Whitcomb Square on the west side. And just go to kellerapartments.com. That's kellerapartments.com. We thank Mike Brockeveld for our engineer tonight. We have Bob Abella coming up next. The Wide World of Radio goes back into the radio shows in the 30s and 40s. Check that out. We'll see you next time on The Mitch Hinks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.